In his latest documentary, Ken Burns explores the devastating Dust Bowl, the environmental catastrophe that destroyed farmland throughout the Great Plains during the 1930s. The first part of the documentary aired last night. The second part airs tonight. Years of drought after the great plow up of millions of acres led to ferocious dust storms sweeping away millions of tons of topsoil. But Burns' documentary, like most historical accounts, focuses on the southern Great Plains, especially the area surrounding the Oklahoma Panhandle. But according to Donald Berg, professor emeritus of geography and history at SDSU, the Dust Bowl hit South Dakota and the northern Great Plains first, with equally devastating results. Donald Berg has been researching the Dust Bowl in this region and joins us on the line. Professor Berg, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much, Carl. Is my phone working okay?
Yep, sounds good.
To begin,
why do you think the northern Great Plains area tends to be overlooked in historical accounts of the Dust Bowl?
Well, I think we could cite a perfect storm of circumstances that all came together to blank out, to, in a sense, the northern Great Plains. The perfect storm is focused upon it was a documentary that was released by the federal government in 1936. It's the plow that broke the plains that was referred to in Ken Burns's movie, documentary, well, his own last night. And then the imagery, people tended to go for the pictures that were taken by the photographers back in the day of the Southern Plains. We had equally as devastating photography that was made up here, but people have dismissed that. And the third thing was John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath that came out in 1939, the movie, not too many months later. And that solidified in a lot of people's minds that it's the Southern Plains and it's the Okies. And also, the fourth item was popular music of the time. 100 years ago, in Oklahoma, Woody Free was born, and he grew up during this period of the Dirty 30s, and a lot of his songs incorporate his experiences from the Dust Bowl. And the last thing that came along, that the federal government aimed a lot of research within the U.S. Department of Agriculture on soil erosion at the Southern Plains. However, I can show you and document that the Northern Plains, and mainly focused on South Dakota, some of the adjacent areas, had as bad or worse conditions in the Southern Plains. We had weather extremes. We had dozens and dozens of dust storms. We had the record-setting temperatures were made for the state in 1936, the record low, the record high, that sort of thing. We had the largest percentage of people on relief in the country than South Dakota in December of 1934 had 39% of the state population were in some form of relief, principally from the federal government. Half of all farmers at the end of the year of 34 into 35 were receiving some kind of government support. North Dakota was second in that lineup then. And we had farm foreclosures over into the tens of thousands, 12,000 more than occurred in North Dakota, for example. And it just kind of goes on how people suffered. We also had grasshopper plagues The Southern Plains will not get a big play in that till 1938, 1940. And here in the Northern Great Plains, and I focus a lot of my attention on South Dakota, we had terrific grasshopper infestations. And they, if a person got a crop, or a partial crop, farmer going on that, grasshoppers would invade and just take over and devastate major areas of counties. Now, you do have to view this, what happened, it was drought, it was desiccation of the landscape. Some people did get a little bit of rain on occasion, and they got a really reduced crop, but if you look at the overall scene here in South Dakota, the precipitation on average was down by over a third, and that really put a crimp in agricultural activities.
Were the causes of the Dust Bowl in the northern and the southern Great Plains, were they essentially similar?
They were essentially the same factors. The immediate cause is that you had a lot of exposed fields, especially in Central Park, for instance, of South Dakota, in the Panhandle, down in Oklahoma, and beyond to the west, to the foothills of the Rockies, the result of the Great Plow-Up, and that exposed the ground cover. Or took it away, really, we should say. And when you dried that out, and then with our winds here on the Great Plains and our wind systems, you just set things up for a terrific amount of wind erosion. And if you didn't get wind, or if you didn't get deposits of soil, and this is, of course, the fine-grained materials on your property, it was blown away, and somebody else got it further downwind. So what happened here in South Dakota, the sediments that were deposited came from West River, came from especially eastern Montana, sometimes northeastern corner of Wyoming, and then also from the Canadian provinces.
Were the dust storms also essentially the same in both the northern Great Plains and the southern Great Plains, or did the differences in the soil composition make any difference?
Well, they had apparently more sand size materials in the southern areas. So although we had sand blows here, it seems in the literature that the sand blows were more frequent in the southern areas.
In your research, in your unpublished paper, you make a reference that there's still some evidence of the dust storms in old houses or houses from the 30s.
Yes, if a structure pre-existed, the terrible 30s, as a lot of people call them, or the dirty 30s, there's a pretty fair chance that you would find dust and sediments within the walls. And we found that here in Brookings, that people have reported when contractors would do remodeling on older housing, that they would find significant accumulations of dust in between the studs, in between them in the walls. So it was around, and East River got a lot of whatever would stop the wind. In this, you also have to keep in mind that dust particles are the finest ones are only a few microns in diameter, and for those that are not familiar with that, a micron measurement is 1/1,000,000th of a meter, and anywhere that the air was moving, which of course were people living and livestock, you would get dust. And it was just made life miserable. And some people, as they showed in Ken Burns' movie, became unhinged in the Southern Plains. Same thing happened here in the northern areas.
What areas in the northern areas, particularly here in South Dakota, what areas were hardest hit during the Dust Bowl?
Well, the erosion, you can look at it two ways, where the sediment ended up or in the erosion. I'm here on campus in Brookings, and if you go about 160 miles as a crow flies south and west, that would get you into the epicenter, and as far as South Dakota scene is concerned, and that would be in especially Tripp in the Lyman counties, just west of the Missouri River Trench, Gregory counties, Jones counties, and then parts of Hughes and Sully. And then there's a band of this, the erosion, soil erosion, that kind of parallels the east side of the James River Valley. And we have reports, and we were trying to find this earlier this year, and when we went on a field trip to find fence lines that were covered up, and they're still, it's still out there, according to some of these reports, that the fence posts are still down below there. And of course, there's kind of a linear feature or mounding along some of these fence lines. Back in the day, the cattle, if you did have cattle, and Burns noted this also, that they could walk over the fences, and so they would get loose and problems like that. Also, the sloughs here in East River, South Dakota, and the glacial lakes have sedimentary layers in the bottoms of them that are the compacted materials that were blown in. A lot of the surface waters in South Dakota here, especially the east side, the streams dried up, the groundwater table decreased, and there were only like three or four lakes up in, mainly in Day County, that were deep enough to survive during this period.
How is the Dust Bowl remembered by people in South Dakota and the northern Great Plains?
It's differential that the senior citizens, they remember this in two ways, that it was a very tough time for a lot of them. Of course, they were children or even teenagers at the time, and they look upon it as a survival feature, because a lot of people did leave South Dakota, and they look back upon this and they say, even though it was tough times, there was community amongst the people that stayed, and there was a survival component to this, and they look back upon a lot of them that they didn't know that when they were kids, of course, that things were totally that bad, and they lived through it, and then they could say, they could reminisce. And when you look at these accounts of people that have given, tape-recorded personal histories of what happened. So it's sort of there's the positive aspects, and then there are sort of the negative aspects. And it varies with, the person, their experience, and so forth. There were some, really devastating situations, especially over in, Kingsbury, to the west of us here, about 72 miles in the Huron area, with children that got caught in dust storms and didn't survive, that sort of thing. So they're, you know, whatever they could find in the southern Great Plains on these personal tragedies, you know, we had more than a few of them up here also.
Other than getting an inaccurate view of history, are there any lasting effects, do you think, of overlooking the Dust Bowl's impact on South Dakota and the upper Great Plains?
Well, some of the researchers say that there is a political component to this, that people developed a Dust Bowl mentality as far as the way the government operates, that is state government and even, well, to the county levels, that you don't want to go out on a financial limb and make big expenditures, that you want to be cautious, that sort of thing. So there's, you know, that legacy in the political side of things. And also, you know, we should remember that the government agricultural support programs basically started in the 1930s with trying to help farmers, principally on the Great Plains, you know, from North Dakota to Texas, to try to stay on the plains and maintain themselves as farmers. And that is, of course, part of the scene now that's being discussed in the Congress with the new Farm Bill, and that those sorts of components enter into it.
Well, Professor Berg, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you very much. Glad we could do this for you.